Welcome, members and guests, to the December 5th program of the City Club of Eugene, the future of Civic Stadium. Thank you for joining us, and greetings to our broadcast television and radio audience. I'm Marlene Nessery, City Club President. Our City Club sponsors for today are the Oregon Country Fair, July 12th, 13th, and 14th, 2015, Friends and Neighbors Realty, Low Key, No Pressure Real Estate Sales and Consulting, and Dot Dotson's. Special thanks go to KPFF Consulting Engineers for supplying our office space and to KLCC Radio for airing these programs at 6:30 on Monday nights. We're very pleased to welcome a returning member, Gretchen Miller, and our newest sponsor, the University of Oregon. A quick reminder that we host nearly 50 original nonpartisan issue programs every year. If you believe with us that civic engagement is the lifeblood of democracy, please consider becoming a City Club donor, sponsor, regular, or virtual member. I also want to share with you some exciting news. City Club of Eugene will be hosting the first female justice of the United States Supreme Court, the Honorable Sandra Day O'Connor, sometime next spring. We're working on the details. We're working on the details, and we'll keep you apprised. Now to today's program. Introducing today's program will be Brittany Quick Warner, who's the program coordinator. Thank you.
Good afternoon. Thank you guys all for coming today. Today's program is focused on the future of Eugene's venerable Civic Stadium. So a lot of us have followed this issue and the stadium and the progress for a while, so we're excited to hear some updates. Our program speakers today are members of the newly formed Eugene Civic Alliance. And we welcome Derek Johnson, a local attorney, Bev Smith, Executive Director of Kids Sports, Greg Osland of the Osland Group, and Dave Gallis, Managing Director of Lane United Football Club.
Thank you very much for the warm welcome. We appreciate the opportunity to be here and speak. Imagine with me a new building, high ceilings, open floor plan, 4 basketball courts, or 9 volleyball courts, natural light streaming in from the slanted roof, and filled with kids running, jumping, and learning the value of physical movement. Imagine volleyball tournaments, elder sports, walking and movement classes in the early morning, and indoor soccer and pickleball leagues in the evening after the children have gone home to bed. Imagine that, and you are imagining the new Kids Sports Fieldhouse. Now, imagine those kids streaming out of the fieldhouse onto a turf field right next door, tapping into that youthful physical energy away from screens, phones, and earbuds. It's big enough for 4 peewee soccer games of a quality suitable for professional women's and men's soccer, of a place to host high school soccer and football games, lacrosse, and even ultimate frisbee. Imagine a community field whose anchor tenant will be Lane United Football Club's men's and women's professional soccer teams in the fastest growing professional sports league in the United States. And finally, imagine a restored wooden grandstand with new original siding, a new roof, ADA compliance, and 4,500 covered seats for fans of all of those activities to enjoy with family and friends. What you are imagining is a community's vision for the redevelopment of the 10 acres of Civic Stadium property. I'm Derek Johnson. With me are Bev Smith, the Executive Director of Kids Sports, Dave Gallis, who's the Managing Director of Lane United Football Club, and Greg Osland, Principal with the Osland Group. Also with us is Nancy Weber, who is helping pull all of this effort together, and Matt Scheibe and Colin MacArthur of Cameron McCarthy, who did the beautiful renderings that you see up here to my right. And for the radio audience, you can see those at the City Club website. We are here as members of the Eugene Civic Alliance. We are a 501c3 whose mission as registered with the state of Oregon, is development and operation of a community sports and entertainment venue on the Civic Stadium property for the physical education and recreation of all children and youth of the community and the community at large. To tell you more about the Kids Sports Fieldhouse, I turn it over now to Bev Smith.
Thank you, Derek. Thank you for having us. It's an honor and pleasure to speak to you today. I listen to this program a lot on the radio, and it's very informative, and I think you bring great educational opportunities and informational opportunities to this community. KidSports has been in the community for 61 years this year, and it is an organization that was formed many years ago by the fathers and slowly but surely the mothers of this community to provide an opportunity for all kids to play. Many of you have either been a part of it through playing, coaching, managing, parenting, officiating at times, even when you weren't supposed to, but that's okay. We're working on that. We have some education. And we really feel that this organization has worked incredibly well with our three partners, which are all of the school districts in this community, Bethel, Springfield, and 4J, and as well as the city of Eugene, to provide access, facilities, and fields at a reasonable price to all of the children and families in this community. And we would very much love to continue to do this for the next 60 years. Our mission to do so, though, has been hampered just by 21st century society. We work very closely with the schools in the city, and when we're outside, the soccer fields that we have in this community are excellent, and they can meet the need of all of our participants. When we go indoors, like a day like today, when we go inside, when it's wet and cold and darker a lot earlier, and we play our volleyball and basketball programs, we are really strapped for facility space. We don't have enough gyms for all of the kids that want to play, and all of the coaches that want to coach. We have over 1,500 volunteers in our organization that give up their time, their energy, their willingness to help our youth, and they also, a lot of them, give up some financial resources to make that all happen, and we want to honor that time and energy that they'd like to give to us. Right now, our schools, as you know, are struggling with budget cuts. Our custodial hours are being shortened, so the time that we have in the gym is, the hours are even fewer, and it's no one's fault, but I think it's all of our responsibility to find a solution. And we would love to be able to be a partner with the schools and the city, as I said, for another 60 years, and how we can do that is with a Kids Sports Fieldhouse that will be a practical, accessible, functional, 4 basketball courts that can be converted into 9 volleyball courts. We do not need a lot of whistles and bells. We don't need any kind of flat screens. We just need an open space where kids can play. And we are going to offer community access to this. It's not only for kids, but it's also for adolescents, and it's also for adults, and it's also for elders. I've had many people approach me and ask me why we don't do elder sports, and I agree. When it's dark and it's wet, you all want to go and walk somewhere. Most people head out to Valley River or Gateway. Wouldn't it be nice to have something like kids sports to be accessible for that? And so that is our mission with the facility. We could also enhance some physical activity and some physical education. What I've seen in my 6 years at kids sports is a lot of our children who join kids sports to have a physical activity and a team sport experience, a lot of that experience is compromised because there's a lack of physical education in our schools that allows them to move their body with confidence and in control, which is called physical literacy. And physical literacy is something that is learned like numeral literacy and reading and writing literacy. It's the ABCs, which translate to agility, balance, coordination, and the development of speed, which occurs about 0 to 11 to 12 years old. And if they have those ABCs of physical movement, they have them for life. And so this is an investment not just in helping kids maybe make the high school basketball or football team, but it's an investment in their human capital, their potential to reach all kinds of heights in terms of their abilities in the classroom, on the field, social skills, all kind of those kind of skills that are formed through moving your body in partnership with others in team sports. And that is why we would like to have a field house that will offer opportunities for children to play, to develop, and above all, just to have fun. So I would welcome any questions, and I take answers after for how we are going to be able to do this. But we need your help. We've had great help from, just like to take my hat off to the Save the Civic group, who have put us in a position to be and have this opportunity to open a field house, and to the many people in this community that see the value of reinvesting and transforming that property for the 21st century. Thank you.
Hello, my name is Dave Gallus. I'm managing director of Lane United Football Club. Lane United is the local semi-pro soccer team, plays in the nationwide Premier Development League. The PDL is composed of 64 teams, 66 next year, nationwide, which is situated two tiers below Major League Soccer. The professional USL Pro League is the tier right below MLS, and that is where Lane United would like to be playing. USL Pro is experiencing phenomenal growth and will expand from 14 to 24 teams next season. USL President Tim Holt thinks the USL Pro could easily be in 30 cities by 2017, and Eugene should be one of them. The only thing keeping Lane United from making the move to USL Pro now is a stadium with suitable capacity, and based on the capacity at Civic Stadium, it would be a perfect venue. Furthermore, a recent Colgate University study of what makes a successful stadium indicates the Civic Stadium site is ideal for both the success of this project and the economic development of the surrounding area. I'm happy to answer all your questions, but I will pass it off to Greg now, because based on its appearance, the condition of the grandstand was, of course, a concern to us. But Greg will fill you in on the details of his inspection and what the grandstand really looks like.
Thank you, Dave. Dave said, I'm Greg Osland. I'm a longtime local engineer with over 30 years of experience working on historic timber structures. I assembled a team that consisted of myself, a structural engineer who was a timber expert, and a certified structures inspector to thoroughly inspect Civic Stadium for its condition and be able to apply accurate rehabilitation cost estimate. I've worked for over 20 years with the structural engineer, for over 30 years with the inspector. We are a team that understands materials, structural integrity, structural rehabilitation, and cultural significance of historic properties. We utilized the 125-foot man lift that Scott Williams of Hamilton Construction generously lent us. This allowed us to thoroughly inspect every nook and cranny of the exterior of the structure. The interior consists of approximately 360 columns. We developed an inspection nomenclature for section row column, giving each one a unique location, and then we inspected each and every one. What we found were that only two of those exterior large columns that were exposed to weather are in bad condition and need to be replaced. And that overall, about 95% of the structural elements are sound. Essentially, the bones of the structure are in excellent condition. Cosmetically, as was mentioned a little earlier, the attached metal stands, kind of the ugly siding, that plywood siding on the west side, and the roofing make the stadium to appear to be in poor shape. However, structurally, as I said, it is mostly in excellent condition. The wood is beautiful, old-growth material you can't get very easily today. The original detailing, design, and construction were done by pros. The general work to be done would be to replace 100% of the roof, all the siding. The siding consists of a beautiful tongue-and-groove vertical siding with a repeating pattern of 9 inches, 2.5s, a 7, 2.5s, back to 9. We would bring that original, beautiful condition back. The roof is in really poor condition. It's concerning because there are several holes and decay has started, and it'll only get worse with continued exposure to the weather. The Save Civic group has the money now, which could be used immediately to replace the roof after the Alliance owns the property. I want to close with just a personal statement, why my desire to see the Civic project succeed, and tell you why it's personal. I'm a lifetime resident of Eugene. I played football and civic as a youth for kids' sports, had my high school football practices there, and attended EMS games since the 70s. I lived until recently for 20 years in College Hill, and Civic Stadium and the vibrant activity there had always been a part of the fabric of the area. I believe that keeping this history alive with what we are proposing is the kind of successful outcome that this community deserves. And I personally didn't want any regrets. In closing, I'm going to give it back to Bev Smith.
Thank you, Greg. Hopefully this is not a closing, but just a beginning for all of us. And we're very much looking forward to it. And all I can say is, in doing a lot of research about our children and how they're doing and where they're going, both physical activity and education, they need our help. There is not a facility like this in Eugene right now. We have tremendous athletic facilities in our community. They're called Matthew Knight Arena. They're called PK Park. They're called Hayward Field, Pape Field, which are excellent and great for higher education. But they do not trickle down to meet the needs of our children. And I read and watched a video that I wished we could have presented here that talks about this generation of children are predicted to live five fewer years than the other generations in the history of mankind. And this is across the globe. This is in every country that is facing this issue. And we have a chance here to take a recreational area that in the 1930s, when it was built, was about allowing hardworking people to go to Civic to have a little bit of a vacation and a rest from the hardworking life of physical labor that built this city. And now in the 21st century, we need to transform it so that we can take all the people that are working very hard in other areas that don't have that physical labor to give them a chance to come back to this area to recreate and to be physically active and healthy, and particularly our children. So we are determined that this will happen. We hope that you can join us to make this happen, and I think it will be a great opportunity for not just the children of our community, but our community as a whole to play host to a wonderful civic stadium. So thank you.
Thank you, Derek Johnson, Greg Osland, Bev Smith, and Dave Gallas. We'll break for a few minutes now and then come back with audience questions.
You're listening to KLCC, NPR for Oregonians. In Eugene, 89.7 FM, KLCC. KLCO Newport, 90.5. KLFR Reedsport, 89.1. And at 88.1, KMPQ Roseburg, KLFO Florence, KLBR Bend. On the web at klcc.org, on Facebook and Twitter, and we have an app for your smartphone or tablet.
Welcome back to the December 5th City Club program, The Future of Civic Stadium. Our presenters are local attorney Derek Johnson, George Osland of the Osland Group, Bev Smith, Executive Director of Kids Sports, and Dave Gallas, Managing Director of Lane United Football Club. Members, please identify yourself before asking your question. If the question comes from a guest or a table discussion, we'd love to have you say so. Thank you.
Susan Conley, City Club member. Thank you all for coming. Appreciate it very much. You know, throughout the history of our country, citizens have gotten together and saved wonderful buildings and features in their own countries. I'm thinking of Chicago and its whole shoreline. It was saved by citizens. There is the wonderful River Rock in San Antonio, also saved by citizens. And most recently, the wonderful High Line in Manhattan, a glorious place to be, also by citizens. So this is entirely appropriate that you're doing this. Of course, the question everybody wants to know is about the money. So our table would like to know about what's happening. Are we almost close to buying it? And if that is successful, then how do we take care of it and how do we maintain it?
Can't believe anybody had asked that question. thank you. The goal is $4.5 million. That's the price ticket that the city has put on this piece of property. The property has a variety of components to it, which we consider assets. And so we're looking at putting together a package of assets for the city that is of a value of $4.5 million. You know, if one of you or several of you want to get together after the meeting and talk to us about the whole 4.5, that would make the transaction much easier. But we're anticipating that we're going to be pretty close to the 4.5, but that we're going to be talking to the city perhaps about retaining part of it for a pocket park. It looks like the park inventory would be well served by a pocket park on the Willamette side, which would connect by a bicycle path through to the bike paths on Amazon Parkway. We've also got a parcel that's at the very north end, and folks on the radio are going to have to go to the websites, but that parcel has a value, and it really would not hurt our vision to have that parcel be purchased by a private individual. And we're actually talking to developers and a hotelier about whether they'd be interested in purchasing that property and developing it into something that would be sympathetic with what we're looking for with the field house and the stadium. We have asks out right now to a number of families and foundations, individuals, and corporations. We're sort of at the position. Interestingly, I've talked to people, said, I feel like I'm building a car while I'm driving across the United States. And we've got the car built, and we're pretty close to across the United States, interestingly. But we've got over the last week, we've had commitments of about $500,000 to add to that we've had in the past. We've got these asks out, and we're also talking with the city, for instance, about the pocket park and some developers about the parcel that's on the north end. So we're moving very well in the direction of getting to the nut that we need to make this work.
Okay, John Anik, City Club member since 2003. I'm prepared to write a check to you for $4.5 million. But
yes.
I must caution you that you would have to be very, very careful in how you cash it. The question that I have, if this project of yours, if you're unable to make it come across 100% as described here, what do you see as possible alternatives, if any?
We've not entertained the option of failing. We're going to get to $4.5 million. And this vision is going to be realized. So that's that. Next question.
James Baldock, City Club member since 2012. Our table was wondering, we were looking at the diagrams that you provide on the cities, and the parking lot looks awfully small for holding 4,500 guests to a soccer game. We were wondering what you plan to do. Is it going to be overfill? How does that whole situation work?
Dave Gallus with Lynn United. The critical components to a successful stadium, as we've seen recently, and the way stadiums have developed the way they've been used in our cities, really indicate that parking is not a huge component for a successful stadium. What is really important is what they call a walk score, people being able to engage with the surrounding neighborhood, walking to other amenities, et cetera, and public transit. The stadium where Major League Soccer is played in Portland, Providence Park, has a seating capacity of about 20,000 people, and they literally have three parking spots. So they make it work, and one of the ways they make it work is partnerships with public transit, partnerships with surrounding businesses, opening up those other parking areas on game days. South Eugene High School, right across the street, has a lot of parking, and it really would not be in use during most of our game times. So that's a perfect opportunity. We're right on two major bus lines and within 0.1 miles of five different bus lines right around the stadium. The other thing is that site has a cycling index of 97, I think. So encouraging people to use public transit, walk, park around the neighborhood, and then use the amount of parking that is on site, I think shouldn't be a problem.
This is Derek Johnson. To further expand on that, just two examples, the parking that's available at Matthew Knight Arena and the parking that's available at Autzen Stadium. This community knows how to get to events without having to drive. And it knows how to solve those parking problems creatively in a way that people can get to these events, enjoy them, and then leave. So we've got very good examples and very good models. The city of Eugene's got an excellent record on figuring out how to deal with parking problems, and we're looking forward to working with them.
John DeLo, City Club. And there was a lot of talk about the need for this place, the stadium and everything. What would it cost to replace this? If you don't have the, if worse comes to worse, then they tear it down, they want to replace it, is it going to cost more to replace it than just to refurbish it?
This is Greg Osland. A lot more. I did a very, very detailed cost estimate, and I think I'm very conservative at being able to rehabilitate that stadium into stands at $2.8 million. I've got significant contingencies and soft costs in there. And I put this in front of Gary Wildish, Chambers Construction, to make sure we had good quality control and assurance from other professionals in this arena. And he can attest that he thinks it's a very comfortable number. You know, an all-new stadium, you're not going to be able to nearly match it in history and quality of materials. But you'll be, I'm going to throw the dart because we never went, this hasn't been part of the equation to do a brand new stadium, but it's at least double.
Yeah, this is Dave Gallus, Lane United. In our research in what it would take to build a stadium, even if we go with a inexpensive modular European system, a lot like the stands that they put up at Hayward for the big meets, the temporary ones. If you make that a semi-permanent structure, we're still looking at Greg's estimates being only 60% of what a semi-permanent / temporary structure would be. So it's very, very cost efficient.
Bob Hart, City Club member since 2009. I think we're all aware this has been a very controversial issue, and a political decision is going to be made on this. You have presented a plan that has specificity, and I think most of the audience would probably be interested in knowing whether your feeling is that City Council, which will be making the decision, has been impressed with the specificity. In other words, might there have been some movement from skepticism towards support?
This is Derek Johnson. Seeing at least three city council members in the audience, I'm not sure I'm going to actually speak for them. But let me address your question in a little bit different way. And that is, we've talked to the city council, all the city council members. We've talked to the school board members, and we've talked to a huge number of people in the community. And frankly, the first blush is skepticism, because what people have heard is, there's no use for this old wooden structure, and you just want to pretty it up. Well, that's not what we're talking about here. And these renderings make that really vividly clear. What we're talking about is restoring that as a grandstand, not a stadium, no plumbing, no locker rooms, no concessions in the grandstand. It's a wooden grandstand. And we're talking about a field house for kids sports. And when you start talking about a field house for kids sports, which has the equivalent of four school gyms under its roof, people perk up, whether they're elected officials or people we're talking to about money or just somebody that I'm talking to when I'm riding the EMX down to town. I mean, people really get the idea of a kids' sports field house. And part of the reason is that there is a tremendous need in the community. There isn't a facility like that in Eugene. And the schools are just being squeezed to where our kids really need a facility like this. And I can't wait to have that thing opened and Bev start putting her programs to use in that facility.
Thanks for coming today. I'm Marty Wilde, City Club member since 2010. Can you tell me about how the financial piece will impact the pace of development? You know, if all goes forward as planned, you know, when would we reasonably expect to see construction start on a field house? And when would the, what's a back of the envelope guess about when we might see the full rehab of the stadium, vice just the roof?
I can talk to you a little bit about the field house. In our research in looking for a facility, we've been looking for a piece of land that we would be able to build a facility to enhance our program. And I just want to make clear that the Kids Sports core program will not change. We will still be going to the schools. We will still be using the schools where the children live and the coaches live so that we can make sure that they're not always traveling. But this field house will really enhance our program in the sense that we have volleyball and basketball programs that without Willamette Lane and without the Lane County Fairgrounds, we would not be able to meet the needs that we currently have. And so we rent Willamette Lane, and we also rent the Lane County Fairgrounds to facilitate our basketball and volleyball practices and leagues. And so the field house is important for that in terms of just our expenditures as an organization. The field house is something that we have talked to the Community Sport Development Council in Salem, which is a nonprofit which works to help youth sport organizations finance fields and facilities, and we would be eligible for a grant from that organization that would help us to pay between 30% and 70% of the costs of the building. However, we can't submit the grant until we have a piece of property that is ours, whether it's leased or owned or donated, that grant can't be submitted. And so as soon as we have the dirt, we could submit the grant, and then we would then be responsible as an organization for a capital campaign, maybe to pay for 30% of those costs or even more. It's hard to say, depending on the grant that we receive. But we could start that pretty quick.
Yep. This is Greg Oslin. Continuing with the question around the timing, I mentioned Safe Civic has the money now to do the roof. You know, after we own the dirt, we can, within 5 weeks from start of replacing that roof, replace the roof and those two bad members that are also contributing to the bad roof condition. After permitting, within 4 months, we can put in a new field. And 18 months total to rehab the stadium.
One of the things that we have in the pipeline, a bunch of grants that we're actually working on right now. This is sort of the third track. The first track is figuring out what we're going to do. The second track is pulling together the assets and the money to buy the property. And the third track is getting the money to build it out. But we've got some grants already that we're working on. To help pay for the artificial turf, for instance. The United States Soccer Federation has a grant program. Adidas has a grant program. And we're talking to a number of organizations like that. Can't pull the trigger until we own the dirt. And so once we do, once the city council makes its decision and we're on board, then we'll start pulling those things together.
Vincenza Scarpacci, City Club member. I guess it's like a three-partite not question. The first part is I really was impressed with your plans to make this facility available to every segment of the population, including the seniors, because it would be a great intergenerational kind of thing, and it is a much needed type of facility for the city. The second part, being a historian, this is a WPA thing, and we should be proud that we have it and keep it as part of us. And using old growth Oregon wood is another part. But the third part of, and this is a real question, is, and I don't know anything about sports, I kind of like to watch soccer because it's very graceful. And I'm just wondering, once this facility is in place, the professional soccer team, how will that fall into place, and what kind of revenue might that produce to, you know, the upkeep of the buildings and whatever?
Dave Gallis, Lane United again. Excuse me. Our ownership group is comprised of a number of local businessmen or people who have local ties all come together, put Lane United on the map as we stand now. We're all in agreement, or the ownership group is in agreement, that we are ready now to go to USL Pro. It's growing so fast and is gaining such huge popularity as a spectator sport that we really feel like the time is now to get in and get in at that level. So we're talking to our existing ownership group in terms of another capital campaign to make that jump, and then talking to other potential investors around the league. I'm heading off to Florida next week for the annual general meetings from the league, and there'll be a lot of discussions about the expansion of the USL Pro specifically. And, of course, we're also looking at the W League, which is the women's equivalent. The WPL is the Women's Professional League. The Portland Thorns won their inaugural season. And so just like that, the W League would be one tier below that. So we'd like to sort of position ourselves in both men and women's soccer as being AAA, and certainly the Northwest is a hotbed, so we should be part of that.
Brittany Quick-Corner, City Club member. My question, I was hoping, Beb, you could talk a little bit to the demand for these types of fields and the need for tournament space, but also the economic impact of this project as a whole on our community.
This is Beb Smith speaking, and thank you for the question. It is a good one. I think that one of the things we've looked at, not only our own tournaments that we are trying to facilitate just for our program and for our registrants, is important to us to have a facility that allows them to be in one place and to feel that it's a part of their community. But the second thing is that in talking to some high school coaches as well, maybe not a lot of high school football fans in here, but I'm one of them, and there is not the possibility of hosting a high school OSAA championship game other than a quarterfinal, because we don't have a field in our community that can host, that has the size, that has the seating capacity, that also has concessions and bathrooms that are not just portable. And so as a result, our Sheldon High School boys team continues to go up to Hillsboro for their semifinal game and their championship game. And if we had a field that could host them, we would be able to host those kind of championships for our high school programs, not only football, but soccer, and as you all know, there's a burgeoning sport happening at kids sports and in the high school right now, and that's lacrosse. And we're really having difficulty finding field space to put everyone on the field. You can put three soccer teams on a field. You can only put a lacrosse team on the field because, as you know, it's a little bit of a dangerous sport with those sticks and those balls. And so it is becoming very, very hard to fit everyone in. I think one of the most competitive sports in Eugene right now is our coaches meeting, when coaches have to come in and they have to sign up for practices, and you know they're trying to get the best hour that they can for themselves and their kids, and it's competitive. I think we should video it, because it is actually showing some pretty good sportsmanship that would be good to show our children. There's also all kinds of opportunities to host tournaments, indoor tournaments, basketball, volleyball. There's an opportunity to have a futsal league, which is a new indoor soccer rage that is happening up in Portland, where they have warehouses that are full from 4 in the afternoon to midnight. We would actually be able to put on tournaments. That building, I think, would be very well used, and I think it would also offer opportunities to have people travel to Eugene, Oregon, rather than always up to Portland or even south to California. So we would look forward to that.
This is Derek Johnson. To further expand on that, we anticipate that the field will be used. There will be about 200 revenue-generating uses of that field per year. Now, that doesn't mean events or games, but it includes things like teams coming and renting the field to practice on it. Right now, the local soccer club, the local kids soccer club, rents the fields out at Lane Community College, and frankly, the capacity out there is not big enough for them to be able to do all of their practices out there. So that their Northwest Christian University is interested in having this field be the home field for their soccer team. So we're looking at what we've done is we've broken down the revenue stream that we anticipate on the field and what it would cost to run that field. And we've actually had a lot of help from Alan Benavides, who's the general manager of the Eugene Emeralds, because they're very familiar with working with running these operations. Bev has put together a very careful evaluation of the costs versus the revenues of running a field house, and those pencil out very nicely. There's a little bit of a profit in both of them. As far as the multiplier in the community, we've talked a lot with Travel Lane County, Carrie Westland, and a woman named Janice Ross, she works in that same office, but she's with Eugene Cascade Coast Sports. They understand the value of having tournaments in these communities. Eugene has an incipient soccer tournament for kids, 70 to 80 to 90 teams. Down in the Rogue Valley, they have 150 to 170 teams that were at the tournament down there. Now, if you consider, they consider that three people come to those tournaments for each player. So you start adding that up, and those are players that are coming from Northern California, Nevada, Montana, Idaho, Hawaii, the Portland area. So you start seeing the multiplier effect of that, of people coming into the town, and the people at Traveling County are just thrilled with the possibility of having a sort of a championship quality field as the sort of the cornerstone of a soccer tournament or an ultimate frisbee tournament right here in town.
My name is Paul Howard, a member of the City Club. I have a question that's sort of toward Greg Oslin, but any of you that might have some sense of real estate appraisal, and especially the City Council. My understanding is that at one time the city sold this property when it was in pristine condition for $1. And I'm just curious, do you think that it is deteriorated sufficiently to warrant the present asking price?
That's a pretty good price. We did have some appraisals done, and I think maybe, Derek, you talk about that.
Well, let me just back up and answer your question in the spirit that you're asking it. And that is that this has forever been a community resource, right? Since the 1930s, this has been public land that's been used by the community. As Bev said, it at the time that most people worked in mills and worked hard, it was a chance for them to go and have a little respite watching the local baseball teams play. Now we flip that, and it's an opportunity for people that work at desks and work indoors to go and have a place to have recreation and move their bodies and teach kids how to move. I understand your question, and the question is accurate. This has always been a public resource, and that's what we envision it being once we get this built out. This is a once in a lifetime legacy moment, right? I mean, we don't get 10 acres within 7 blocks of the university, 10 blocks of downtown. That doesn't happen anymore. So we can do this, and we're going to do it. And when we're done, we're going to look back and we're going to say, we did those guys in 1937 proud because we followed their legacy and we did something that we can be proud of and that they would be proud of too.
Hi, Marlene Nesri, City Club member. I'm interested in a couple of things. First of all, I believe it was Dave, talked about the criteria for success in terms of building stadiums. And I'm interested in hearing a little bit more about that. And the vision that's in my mind, of course, is giant National Football League stadiums that the taxpayers finance and the owners and players reap the benefits for. So I'm interested in how that criteria for success applies to this apparently quite different situation, for one. And I'm also concerned about what kind of public responsibility will there be for upkeep and maintenance and fallback and all of that. I mean, you're talking about different kinds of potential revenue streams and different kinds of economic impacts, but I just don't understand sort of the proportion of what is going to be a public responsibility, if any. So, thanks.
Dave Gallis with Lynn Knight. I will address the stadium and the success, what makes for a successful stadium, and then I'll hand it off to Derek to talk about the city and what responsibilities lie there. So, yes, the studies that have been done on stadiums and whether they're successful or not are mostly financial, how much of a burden they are on the public, and how much of an effect they have on economic development immediately surrounding them. And what has been found is that you have to pay very close attention to the size of the stadium, the size of your population, the average, the median incomes, et cetera, et cetera. This stadium at 4,500 seats as it sits right now meets the league minimum for USL Pro. So Greg's team goes in, they clean it up, we get a field, we can be playing. The sweet spot for capacity for what we want to do in this region, Eugene Springfield, our population base, is right around 8,000 seats. And that's what Cameron McCarthy and Skylabs have put together in the renderings you see here. In terms of the site, that to me is the most important thing of this entire project. It's, I think I mentioned before, walk score was one of the best indicators for success for a stadium. And the average walk score of what is considered a successful stadium, by financial standards again, is a 77. This site has a walk score of 85. There's a whole bunch of metrics that go into that score. The lowest metric, interestingly enough, is for that 85, is entertainment. So we would be bringing entertainment to the site and actually increasing that walk score effectively. The other one is a cycling index with Amazon paths right there, Willamette, all the intersecting bike paths. It's at a 97. It's relatively flat. You can get there really easily from anywhere. And then we have what was recently voted America's best public transit system. And their LTD is very interested in working with us, putting more bus stops right on Amazon and providing access to this stadium from all over the region. So those things, that location, location, location element is really, really critical for making a successful, a financially successful stadium that can be self-supporting. And then again, as what Derek was saying, it's 10 acres in a prime spot. It's not happening again. If it goes away, I mean, regardless of the structure, which also I think is also great, regardless of the structure, if the site goes away, no one's going to buy up a block of 50 houses to tear them down and build a stadium. We're going to end up out in the suburbs, and then it's going to be a much, much bigger financial risk because the indicators are that it's not going to work as well.
And this is Derek Johnson. To follow up on the second part of the question regarding city responsibility for upkeep and maintenance and stuff, we don't anticipate any. We see the field house as being self-sustaining, and we see the field and the stadium as being self-sustaining. If the city decides that they want to own a pocket park next to Willamette, that would be their responsibility. But I think that probably while we're in there doing site work, we could probably help with building that up. So we see this as being a real win for the community and for the city too.
Dan Bryant, City Club member since 1996. So I have to confess that I was one of those skeptics. Not because I didn't believe that we should do something along this line. I just wasn't sure that it was financially viable. We, in this club, we heard a very fine presentation, gosh, just 6 months ago or so, about a commercial retail development for the same property. And when I hear your presentation, there is no question in my mind that this is the highest and best use possible for this property. So the question I'd like to ask you is, I think about the connection between the history and the future that is such a compelling, powerful story Are you talking to public relations firms about how to tell that story, to sell this product to the community? Because I think it's very exciting, and the story just needs to be really sold and presented well.
Derek Johnson, first, Reverend Bryant, I'm glad that we were able to restore your faith.
Amen.
Second, we really are working with some really top quality public relations people. Nancy Weber, for one. Jenny Olam is working with us, and we're pulling all those pieces together. Further, the fellas at Cameron McCarthy have been doing huge amounts of work, which, as far as I'm concerned, translate into public relations as well. I mean, you look at these renderings, and they just sing when you look at them. And so we're working with some pretty top-notch people, and we're going to continue to. There's a lot going on with this project, and it's fun. But the people that are involved are dynamic, and that's part of why we are so confident that it's going to work.
Thank you all so much for bringing clarity and vision to this City Club program, the future of Civic Stadium. And thanks again to our sponsors, the Oregon Country Fair, Friends and Neighbors Realty, and Dot Dotson's. We meet again next Friday, December 12th, at the Downtown Athletic Club for Transforming the Campus, Comprehensive Sexual Violence Prevention Response Efforts at the University of Oregon. Lunches for the program can be ordered on City Club's website or by contacting the office. Thanks again, everyone, for joining us.